paint it. This is my favorite view, Tarquin said beside me, and I realized I'd gone to the wide windows while the others had seated themselves around the mother-of-pearl table. A handful of servants were heaping fruits, leafy greens, and steamed shellfish onto their plates. You must be very proud, I said, to have such stunning lands. Tarquin's eyes, so like the sea beyond us, slid to me. How do they compare to the ones you have seen? Such a carefully crafted question, I said dully. Everything in Prithian is lovely when compared to the mortal realm.
And is being immortal lovelier than being human?
I could feel everyone's attention on us, even as Rhys engaged Cressida and Varian in bland, edged discussion about the status of their fish markets. So I looked the High Lord of Summer up and down, as he had examined me, brazenly and without a shred of politeness, and then said, You tell me. Tarquin's eyes crinkled.
You are a pearl. Though I knew that the day you threw that bone at Amarantha and splattered mud on her favorite dress.
I shut out the memories, the blind terror of that first trial. What did he make of that tug between us? Did he realize it was his own power, or think it was a bond of its own, some sort of strange allure? And if I had to steal from him, perhaps that meant getting closer. I do not remember you being quite so handsome under the mountain. The sunlight and sea suit you. A lesser male might have preened, but Tarquin knew better, knew that I had been with Tamlin and was now with Rhys, and had now been brought here. Perhaps he thought me no better than Ianthe.
How exactly do you fit within Rhysand's court?
A direct question, after such roundabout ones, to no doubt get me on uneven footing. It almost worked. I nearly admitted I don't know, but Rhys said from the table, as if he'd heard every word,
Feyre is a member of my inner circle, and is my emissary to the mortal lands.
Cressida, seated beside him, said, Do you have much contact with the mortal realm? I took that as an invitation to sit and get away from the too heavy stare of Tarquin. A seat had been left open for me at Amryn's side, across from Rhys. The High Lord of the Night Court sniffed at his wine, white, sparkling, and I wondered if he was trying to piss them off by implying they'd poisoned it, as he said.
I prefer to be prepared for every potential situation, and, given that Highburn seems set on making themselves a nuisance, striking up a conversation with the humans might be in our best interest.
Varian drew his focus away from Amryn long enough to say roughly,
So it's been confirmed, then. Highburn is readying for war.
They're done readying,
Rhys drawled, at last sipping from his wine. Amryn didn't touch her plate, though she pushed things around as she always did. I wondered who she'd eat while here. Varian seemed like a good guess.
War is imminent.
Yes, you mentioned that in your letter. Tarquin said, claiming the seat at the head of the table between Rhys and Amryn.
A bold move, to situate himself between two such powerful beings. Arrogance, or an attempt at friendship. Tarquin's gaze again drifted to me, before focusing on Rhys.
And you know that against Highburn, we will fight. We lost enough good people under the mountain. I have no interest in being slaves again.
But if you are here to ask me to fight in another war, Rhysand,
that is not a possibility, Rhys smoothly cut in, and had not even entered my mind.
My glimmer of confusion must have shone, because Cressida crooned to me, High lords have gone to war for less, you know. Doing it over such an unusual female would be nothing unexpected.
Which was likely why they had accepted this invitation, favor or no. To feel us out. If Tamlin went to war to get me back.
No, that wouldn't be an option. I'd written to him, told him to stay away, and he wasn't foolish enough to start a war he could not win. Not when he wouldn't be fighting other High Fae, but Illyrian warriors, led by Cassian and Azrael. It would be slaughter. So I said, bored and flat and dull,
Try not to look too excited, Princess. The High Lord of Spring has no plans to go to war with the Night Court.
And are you in contact with Tamlin, then?
A saccharine smile.
My next words were quiet, slow, and I decided I did not mind stealing from them, not one bit. There are things that are public knowledge and things that are not. My relationship with him is well known. Its current standing, however, is none of your concern, or anyone else's. But I do know Tamlin, and I know that there will be no internal war between courts, at least not over me or my decisions.
What a relief, then,
Cressida said, sipping from her white wine before cracking a large crab claw, pink and white and orange,
to know we are not harboring a stolen bride, and that we need not bother returning her to her master, as the law demands, and as any wise person might do to keep trouble from their doorstep.
Amryn had gone utterly still. I left of my own free will, I said, and no one is my master. Cressida shrugged.
Think that all you want, lady, but the law is the law. You are, were, his bride. Swearing fealty to another High Lord does not change that. So it is a very good thing that he respects your decisions. Otherwise, all it would take would be one letter from him to Tarquin requesting your return, and we would have to obey, or risk war ourselves.
Rhysand sighed.
You are always a joy, Cressida.
Varian said,
Careful, High Lord. My sister speaks the truth.
Tarquin laid a hand on the pale table.
Rhysand is our guest. His courtiers are our guests, and we will treat them as such. We will treat them, Cressida, as we treat people who saved our necks, when all it would have taken was one word from them for us to be very, very dead.
Tarquin studied me and Rhysand, whose face was gloriously disinterested. The High Lord of Summer shook his head and said to Rhys,
We have more to discuss later, you and I. Tonight, I'm throwing a party for you all on my pleasure barge in the bay. After that, you're free to roam in this city wherever you wish. You will forgive its princess if she is protective of her people. Rebuilding these months has been long and hard. We do not wish to do it again anytime soon.
Cressida's eyes grew dark, haunted.
Cressida made many sacrifices on behalf of her people,
Tarquin offered gently to me.
Do not take her caution personally. We all made sacrifices,
Rhysand said, the icy boredom now shifting into something razor sharp.
And now you sit at this table with your family because of the ones Feyre made. So you will forgive me, Tarquin, if I tell your princess that if she sends word to Tamlin, or if any of your people try to bring her to him, their lives will be forfeit.
Even the sea breeze died.
Do not threaten me in my own home, Rhysand, Tarquin said. My gratitude goes only so far.
It's not a threat. Rhys countered, the crab claws on his plate cracking open beneath invisible hands.
It's a promise.
They all looked at me, waiting for any response. So I lifted my glass of wine, looked them each in the eye, holding Tarquin's gaze the longest, and said, No wonder immortality never gets dull. Tarquin chuckled, and I wondered if his loosed breath was one of profound relief. And through that bond between us, I felt Rhysand's flicker of approval. Chapter 33. We were given a suite of connecting rooms, all centered on a large, lavish lounge that was open to the sea and city below. My bedroom was appointed in sea foam and softest blue with pops of gold, like the gilded clamshell atop my pale wood dresser. I had just set it down when the white door behind me clicked open and Rhys slid in. He leaned against the door once he shut it, the top of his black tunic unbuttoned to reveal the upper whorls of the tattoo spanning his chest.
The problem, I've realized, will be that I like Tarquin,
he said by way of greeting.
I even like Cressida. Varian I could live without, but I bet a few weeks with Cassian and Asriel, and he'd be thick as thieves with them, and I'd have to learn to like him. Or he'd be wrapped around Amryn's finger, and I'd have to leave him alone entirely, or risk her wrath.
And? I took up a spot against the dresser, where clothes that I had not packed but were clearly of Night Court origin had been already waiting for me. The space of the room, the large bed, the windows, the sunlight, filled the silence between us.
And, Rhys said, I want you to find a way to do what you have to do, without making enemies of them.
So you're telling me don't get caught?
A nod. Then, do you like that Tarquin can't stop looking at you? I can't tell if it's because he wants you, or because he knows you have his power and wants to see how much.
Can't it be both?
Of course. But having a High Lord lusting after you is a dangerous game.
First you taunt me with Cassian, now Tarquin. Can't you find other ways to annoy me?
Rhys prowled closer, and I steadied myself for his scent, his warmth, the impact of his power. He braced a hand on either side of me, gripping the dresser. I refused to shrink away. You have one task here, Feyre. One task that no one can know about. So do anything you have to in order to accomplish it. But get that book, and do not get caught.
I wasn't some simpering fool. I knew the risks, and that tone, that look he always gave me. Anything? His brows rose. I breathed. If I fucked him for it, what would you do?
His pupils flared, and his gaze dropped to my mouth. The wood dresser groaned beneath his hands. You say such atrocious things. I waited, my heart an uneven beat. He at last met my eyes again. You are always free to do what you want, with whomever you want. So if you want to ride him, go ahead.
Maybe I will, though a part of me wanted to retort, liar.
Fine, his breath caressed my mouth.
Fine, I said, aware of every inch between us, the distance smaller and smaller, the challenge heightening with each second neither of us moved.
Do not, he said softly, his eyes like stars, jeopardize this mission.
I know the cost. The sheer power of him enveloped me, shaking me awake. The salt and sea and the breeze tugged on me, sang to me, and as if Rhys heard them too, he inclined his head toward the unlit candle on the dresser.
Light it.
I debated arguing, but looked at the candle, summoning fire, summoning that hot anger he managed to rile. The candle was knocked off the dresser by a violent splash of water, as if someone had chucked a bucketful. I gaped at the water drenching the dresser, its dripping on the marble floor the only sound. Rhys, hands still braced on either side of me, laughed quietly.
Can't you ever follow orders?
But whatever it was, being here, close to Tarquin and his power, I could feel that water answering me, feel it coating the floor, feel the sea churning and idling in the bay, taste the salt on the breeze. I held Rhys's gaze. No one was my master, but I might be master of everything, if I wished, if I dared. Like a strange rain, the water rose from the floor as I willed it to become like those stars Rhys had summoned in his blanket of darkness. I willed the droplets to separate until they hung around us, catching the light and sparkling like crystals on a chandelier. Rhys broke my stare to study them.
I suggest, he murmured, you not show Tarquin that little trick in the bedroom.
I sent each and every one of those droplets shooting for the High Lord's face. Too fast, too swiftly for him to shield. Some of them sprayed me as they ricocheted off him. Both of us now soaking, Rhys gaped a bit, then smiled.
Good work, he said, at last pushing off the dresser.
He didn't bother to wipe away the water gleaming on his skin.
Keep practicing.
But I said, will he go to war? Over me?
He knew who I meant. The hot temper that had been on Rhys's face moments before turned to lethal calm. I don't know.
I would go back. If it came to that, Rhysand, I would go back rather than make you fight.
He slid a still wet hand into his pocket. Would you want to go back? Would going to war on your behalf make you love him again? Would that be a grand gesture to win you?
I swallowed hard. I'm tired of death. I wouldn't want to see anyone else die, least of all for me.
That doesn't answer my question.
No, I wouldn't want to go back, but I would. Pain and killing wouldn't win me.
Rhys stared at me for a moment longer, his face unreadable, before he strode to the door.
He stopped with his fingers on the sea urchin-shaped handle.
He locked you up because he knew. The bastard knew what a treasure you are. That you are worth more than land or gold or jewels. He knew, and wanted to keep you all to himself.
The words hit me, even as they soothed some jagged peace in my soul. He does love me, Rhysand.
The issue isn't whether he loved you, it's how much. Too much. Love can be a poison.
And then he was gone. The bay was calm enough, perhaps willed to flatness by its lord and master, that the pleasure barge hardly rocked throughout the hours we dined and drank aboard it. Crafted of richest wood and gold, the enormous boat was amply sized for the 100 or so high fae, trying their best not to observe every movement Rhys Amryn and I made. The main deck was full of low tables and couches for eating and relaxing, and on the upper level, beneath a canopy of tiles set with mother-of-pearl, our long table had been set. Tarquin was summer incarnate in turquoise and gold, bits of emerald shining at his buttons and fingers. A crown of sapphire and white gold fashioned like cresting waves sat atop his seafoam-colored hair, so exquisite that I often caught myself staring at it. As I was now, when he turned to see where I sat on his right and noticed my stare.
You'd think with our skilled jewelers they could make a crown a bit more comfortable. This one digs in horribly.
A pleasant enough attempt at conversation, when I'd stayed quiet throughout the first hour, instead watching the island city, the water, the mainland, casting a net of awareness, of blind power toward it, to see if anything answered, if the book slumbered somewhere out there. Nothing had answered my silent call, so I figured it was as good a time as any, as I said. How did you keep it out of her hands? Saying Amarantha's name here, amongst such happy, celebrating people, felt like inviting in a rain cloud. Seated at his left, deep in conversation with Cressida, Rhys didn't so much as look over at me. Indeed, he'd barely spoken to me earlier, not even noting my clothes. Unusual, given that even I had been pleased with how I looked, and had again selected it for myself. My hair unbound and swept off my face with a headband of braided rose gold, my sleeveless dusk-pink chiffon gown, tight in the chest and waist, the near twin to the purple one I'd worn that morning. Feminine, soft, pretty. I hadn't felt like those things in a long, long while. Hadn't wanted to. But here, being those things wouldn't earn me a ticket to a life of party planning. Here, I could be soft and lovely at sunset, and awaken in the morning to slide into Illyrian fighting leathers. Tarquin said,
We managed to smuggle out most of our treasure when the territory fell. Nostris, my predecessor, was my cousin. I served as prince of another city, so I got the order to hide the trove in the dead of night, fast as we could.
Amarantha had killed Nostris when he'd rebelled, and executed his entire family for spite. Tarquin must have been one of the few surviving members, if the power had passed to him. I didn't know the summer court valued treasure so much, I said. Tarquin huffed a laugh.
The earliest High Lords did. We do now out of tradition, mostly.
I said carefully, casually. So, is it gold and jewels you value, then?
Among other things.
I sipped my wine, to buy time to think of a way to ask without raising suspicions. But maybe being direct about it would be better. Are outsiders allowed to see the collection? My father was a merchant. I spent most of my childhood in his office, helping him with his goods. It would be interesting to compare mortal riches to those made by fey hands. Rhys kept talking to Cressida, not even a hint of approval or amusement going through our bond. Tarquin cocked his head, the jewels in his crown glinting.
Of course. Tomorrow? After lunch, perhaps.
He wasn't stupid, and he might have been aware of the game, but the offer was genuine. I smiled a bit, nodding. I looked toward the crowd milling about on the deck below, the lantern-lit water beyond, even as I felt Tarquin's gaze linger. He said,
What was it like, the mortal world?
I picked at the strawberry salad on my plate. I only saw a very small slice of it. My father was called the Prince of Merchants, but I was too young to be taken on his voyages to other parts of the mortal world. When I was 11, he lost our fortune on a shipment to Barat. We spent the next 8 years in poverty in a backwater village near the wall. So I can't speak for the entirety of the mortal world when I say that what I saw there was hard, brutal. Here, class lines are far more blurred, it seems. There, it's defined by money. Either you have it and you don't share it, or you are left to starve and fight for your survival. My father, he regained his wealth once I went to Prithian. My heart tightened, then dropped into my stomach. And the very people who had been content to let us starve were once again our friends. I would rather face every creature in Prithian than the monsters on the other side of the wall. Without magic, without power, money has become the only thing that matters. Tarquin's lips were pursed, but his eyes were considering. Would you spare them if war came? Such a dangerous, loaded question. I wouldn't tell him what we were doing over the wall, not until Rhys had indicated we should. My sisters dwell with my father on his estate. For them, I would fight. But for those sycophants and peacocks, I would not mind to see their order disrupted, like the hate-mongering family of Elaine's betrothed. Tarquin said very quietly, there are some in Prithian who would think the same of the courts. What? Get rid of the High Lords? Perhaps, but mostly eliminate the inherent privileges of High Fae over the lesser fairies. Even the terms imply a level of unfairness. Maybe it is more like the human realm than you realize, not as blurred as it might seem. In some courts, the lowest of High Fae servants has more rights than the wealthiest of lesser fairies. I became aware that we were not the only people on the barge at this table, and that we were surrounded by High Fae with animal keen hearing. Do you agree with them that it should change? I am a young High Lord, he said, barely 80 years old. So he'd been 30 when Amarantha took over. Perhaps others might call me inexperienced or foolish, but I have seen those cruelties firsthand, and known many good lesser fairies who suffered for merely being born on the wrong side of power. Even within my own residences, the confines of tradition pressure me to enforce the rules of my predecessors. The lesser fairies are neither to be seen nor heard as they work. I would like to one day see a Prithian in which they have a voice, both in my home and in the world beyond it. I scanned him for any deceit, manipulation. I found none. Steal from him. I would steal from him. But what if I asked instead? Would he give it to me, or would the traditions of his ancestors run too deep? Tell me what that look means, Tarquin said, bracing his muscled arms on the gold tablecloth. I said baldly, I'm thinking it would be very easy to love you, and easier to call you my friend. He smiled at me, broad and without restraint. I would not object to either. Easy, very easy to fall in love with a kind, considerate male. But I glanced over at Cressida, who was now almost in Rhysand's lap, and Rhysand was smiling like a cat, one finger tracing circles on the back of her hand while she bit her lip and beamed. I faced Tarquin, my brows high in silent question. He made a face and shook his head. I hoped they went to her room, because if I had to listen to Rhys bed her, I didn't let myself finish the thought. Tarquin mused. It has been many years since I saw her look like that. My cheeks heated. Shame. Shame for what? Wanting to throttle her for no good reason? Rhysand teased and taunted me. He never seduced me with those long, intense stares, the half-smiles that were pure Illyrian arrogance. I suppose I'd been granted that gift once, and had used it up, and fought for it, and broken it. And I supposed that Rhysand, for all he had sacrificed and done, he deserved it as much as Cressida. Even if for a moment I wanted it. I wanted to feel like that again. And I was lonely. I had been lonely, I realized, for a very, very long time. Rhys leaned in to hear something Cressida was saying, her lips brushing his ear, her hand now entwining with his. And it wasn't sorrow or despair or terror that hit me, but unhappiness, such bleak, sharp unhappiness that I got to my feet. Rhys's eyes shifted toward me, at last remembering I existed, and there was nothing on his face, no hint that he felt any of what I did through our bond. I didn't care if I had no shield, if my thoughts were wide open and he read them like a book. He didn't seem to care either. He went back to chuckling at whatever Cressida was telling him, sliding closer. Tarquin had risen to his feet, scanning me and Rhys. I was unhappy, not just broken, but unhappy. An emotion, I realized. It was an emotion rather than the unending emptiness or survival-driven terror. I need some fresh air, I said, even though we were in the open. But with the golden lights, the people up and down the table, I needed to find a spot on this barge where I could be alone, just for a moment, mission or no. Would you like me to join you? I looked at the High Lord of Summer. I hadn't lied. It would be easy to fall in love with a male like him. But I wasn't entirely sure that even with the hardships he'd encountered under the mountain, Tarquin could understand the darkness that might always be in me, not only from Amarantha, but from years spent being hungry and desperate. That I might always be a little vicious or restless, that I might crave peace, but never a cage of comfort. I'm fine, thank you, I said, and headed for the sweeping staircase that led down onto the stern of the ship, brightly lit, but quieter than the main areas at the prow. Rhys didn't so much as look in my direction as I walked away. Good riddance. I was halfway down the wood steps when I spotted Amryn and Varian, both leaning against adjacent pillars, both drinking wine, both ignoring each other, even as they spoke to no one else. Perhaps that was another reason why she'd come, to distract Tarquin's watchdog. I reached the main deck, found a spot by the wooden railing that was a bit more shadowed than the rest, and leaned against it. Magic propelled the boat, no oars, no sails, so we moved through the bay, silent and smooth, hardly a ripple in our wake. I didn't realize I'd been waiting for him until the barge docked at the base of the island city, and I'd somehow spent the entire final hour alone. When I filed onto land with the rest of the crowd, Amryn, Varian, and Tarquin were waiting for me at the docks, all a bit stiff-backed. Rhysand and Cressida were nowhere to be seen. Chapter 34. Mercifully, there was no sound from his closed bedroom, and no sounds came out of it during that night when I jolted awake from a nightmare of being turned over a spit and couldn't remember where I was. Moonlight danced on the sea beyond my open windows, and there was silence, such silence. A weapon. I was a weapon to find that book, to stop the king from breaking the wall, to stop whatever he had planned for Jurien and the war that might destroy my world, that might destroy this place, and a high lord who might very well overturn the order of things. For a heartbeat, I missed Velaris, missed the lights and the music and the rainbow. I missed the cozy warmth of the townhouse to welcome me in from the crisp winter, missed what it had been like to be a part of their little unit. Maybe wrapping his wings around me, writing me notes, had been Rhys's way of ensuring his weapon didn't break beyond repair. That was fine. Fair enough. We owed each other nothing beyond our promises to work and fight together. He could still be my friend, companion, whatever this thing was between us. His taking someone to his bed didn't change those things. It had just been a relief to think that, for a moment, he might have been as lonely as me. I didn't have the nerve to come out of my room for breakfast, to see if Rhys had returned, to see whom he came to breakfast with. I had nothing else to do, I told myself as I lay in bed, until my lunchtime visit with Tarquin. So I stayed there until the servants came in, apologized for disturbing me, and started to leave. I stopped them, saying I'd bathe while they cleaned the room. They were polite, if nervous, and merely nodded as I did as I'd claimed. I took my time in the bath, and behind the locked door, I let that kernel of Tarquin's power come out, first making the water rise from the tub, then shaping little animals and creatures out of it. It was about as close to transformation as I'd let myself go. Contemplating how I might give myself animalistic features only made me shaky, sick. I could ignore it, ignore that occasional scrape of claws in my blood for a while yet. I was on to water butterflies flitting through the room when I realized I'd been in the tub long enough that the bath had gone cold. Like the night before, Nuala walked through the walls from wherever she was staying in the palace and dressed me, somehow attuned to when I'd be ready. Caradwyn, she told me, had drawn the short stick and was seeing to Amryn. I didn't have the nerve to ask about Rhys either. Nuala selected seafoam green accented with rose gold, curling and then braiding back my hair in a thick loose plait glimmering with bits of pearl. Whether Nuala knew why I was there, what I'd be doing, she didn't say. But she took extra care of my face, brightening my lips with raspberry pink, dusting my cheeks with the faintest blush. I might have looked innocent, charming, were it not for my gray-blue eyes. More hollow than they'd been last night when I'd admired myself in the mirror. I'd seen enough of the palace to navigate to where Tarquin had said to meet before we bid goodnight. The main hall was situated on a level about halfway up, the perfect meeting place for those who dwelled in the spires above and those who worked unseen and unheard below. This level held all the various council rooms, ballrooms, dining rooms, and whatever other rooms might be needed for visitors, events, gatherings. Access to the residential levels from which I'd come was guarded by 4 soldiers at each stairwell, all of whom watched me carefully as I waited against a seashell pillar for their high lord. I wondered if he could sense that I'd been playing with his power in the bathtub, that the piece of him he'd yielded was now here and answering to me. Tarquin emerged from one of the adjacent rooms as the clock struck 2, followed by my own companions. Rhysand's gaze swept over me, noting the clothes that were obviously in honor of my host and his people, noting the way I did not meet his eyes, or Cressida's, as I looked solely at Tarquin and Amryn beside him, Varian now striding off to the soldiers at the stairs, and gave them both a bland, close-lipped smile. "You're looking well today," Tarquin said, inclining his head. Nuala, it seemed, was a spectacularly good spy. Tarquin's pewter tunic was accented with the same shade of seafoam green as my clothes. We might as well have been a matching set. I supposed with my brown gold hair and pale skin, I was his mirror opposite. I could feel Rhys still assessing me. I shut him out. Maybe I'd send a water dog barking after him later, let it bite him in the ass. "I hope I'm not interrupting," I said to Amryn. Amryn shrugged her slim shoulders, clad in flagstone gray today. "We were finishing up a rather lively debate about armadas and who might be in charge of a unified front. Did you know," she said, "that before they became so big and powerful, Tarquin and Varian led Nostris's fleet?" Varian, several feet away, stiffened, but did not turn. I met Tarquin's eye. "You didn't mention you were a sailor." It was an effort to sound intrigued, like I had nothing at all bothering me. Tarquin rubbed his neck.
"I had planned to tell you during our tour."
He held out an arm.
"Shall we?"
Not one word. I had not uttered one word to Rhysand, and I wasn't about to start as I looped my arm through Tarquin's and said to none of them in particular, "See you later." Something brushed against my mental shield, a rumble of something dark, powerful, perhaps a warning to be careful, though it felt an awful lot like the dark, flickering emotion that had haunted me, so much like it that I stepped a bit closer to Tarquin, and then I gave the High Lord of Summer a pretty, mindless smile that I had not given to anyone in a long, long time. That brush of emotion went silent on the other side of my shields. Good. Tarquin brought me to a hall of jewels and treasures so vast that I gawked for a good minute, a minute that I used to scan the shelves for any twinkle of feeling, anything that felt like the male at my side, like the power I'd summoned in the bathtub. "And this is just one of the troves?" The room had been carved deep beneath the castle, behind a heavy lead door that had only opened when Tarquin placed his hand on it. I didn't dare get close enough to the lock to see if it might work under my touch, his feigned signature. A fox in a chicken coop, that's what I was. Tarquin loosed a chuckle. My ancestors were greedy bastards. I shook my head, striding to the shelves built into the wall. Solid stone. No way to break in unless I tunneled through the mountain itself, or if someone winnowed me, though there were likely wards similar to those on the townhouse and the House of Wind. Boxes overflowed with jewels and pearls and uncut gems, gold heaps in trunks so high it spilled onto the cobblestone floor. Suits of ornate armor stood guard against one wall, dresses woven of cobwebs and starlight leaned against another. There were swords and daggers of every sort, but no books, not one. Do you know the history behind each piece?
Some, he said. I haven't had much time to learn about it all.
Good. Maybe he wouldn't know about the book, wouldn't miss it. I turned in a circle. What's the most valuable thing in here?
Thinking of stealing.
I choked on a laugh. Wouldn't asking that question make me a lousy thief? Lying, two-faced wretch. That's what asking that question made me. Tarquin studied me. I'd say, I'm looking at the most valuable thing in here. I didn't fake the blush. You're very kind. His smile was soft, as if his position had not yet broken the compassion in him. I hoped it never did.
Honestly, I don't know what's the most valuable thing. These are all priceless heirlooms of my house.
I walked up to a shelf, scanning. A necklace of rubies was splayed on a velvet pillow, each of them the size of a robin's egg. It'd take a tremendous female to wear that necklace, to dominate the gems and not the other way around. On another shelf, a necklace of pearls, then sapphires, and on another, a necklace of black diamonds. Each of the dark stones was a mystery and an answer. Each of them slumbered. Tarquin came up behind me, peering over my shoulder at what had snagged my interest. His gaze drifted to my face.
Take it.
What? I whirled to him. He rubbed the back of his neck.
As a thank you. For under the mountain.
Ask it now. Ask him for the book instead. But that would require trust, and, kind as he was a high lord. He pulled the box from its resting spot and shut the lid before handing it to me.
You were the first person who didn't laugh at my idea to break down class barriers. Even Cressida snickered when I told her. If you won't accept the necklace for saving us, then take it for that.
It is a good idea, Tarquin. Appreciating it doesn't mean you have to reward me. He shook his head.
Just take it.
It would insult him if I refused, so I closed my hands around the box. Tarquin said,
It will suit you in the Night Court.
Perhaps I'll stay here and help you revolutionize the world. His mouth twisted to the side.
I could use an ally in the North.
Was that why he had brought me? Why he'd given me the gift? I hadn't realized how alone we were down here, that I was beneath ground, in a place that could be easily sealed.
You have nothing to fear from me, he said,
and I wondered if my scent was that readable.
But I meant it. You have sway with Rhysand, and he is notoriously difficult to deal with. He gets what he wants, has plans he does not tell anyone about until after he's completed them, and does not apologize for any of it. Be his emissary to the human realm, but also be ours. You've seen my city. I have three others like it. Amarantha wrecked them almost immediately after she took over. All my people want now is peace and safety and to never have to look over their shoulders again. Other High Lords have told me about Rhys and warned me about him, but he spared me under the mountain. Brutius was my cousin, and we had forces gathering in all of our cities to storm under the mountain. They caught him sneaking out through the tunnels to meet with them. Rhys saw that in Brutius's mind. I know he did. And yet he lied to her face, and defied her when she gave the order to turn him into a living ghost. Maybe it was for his own schemes, but I know it was a mercy. He knows that I am young, and inexperienced, and
He spared me.
Tarquin shook his head, mostly at himself. Sometimes I think Rhysand, I think he might have been her whore to spare us all from her attention.
I would betray nothing of what I knew, but I suspected he could see it in my eyes, the sorrow at the thought.
I know I'm supposed to look at you, Tarquin said, and see that he's made you into a pet, into a monster. But I see the kindness in you, and I think that reflects more on him than anything. I think it shows that you and he might have secrets.
Stop, I blurted. Just stop. You know I can't tell you anything, and I can't promise you anything. Rhysand is High Lord. I only serve in his court.
Tarquin glanced at the ground. Forgive me if I've been forward. I'm still learning how to play the games of these courts, to my advisor's chagrin.
I hope you never learn how to play the games of these courts.
Tarquin held my gaze, face wary, but a bit bleak.
Then allow me to ask you a blunt question.
Is it true you left Tamlin because he locked you up in his house?
I tried to block out the memory, the terror and agony of my heart breaking apart, but I nodded.
And is it true that you were saved from confinement by the Night Court?
I nodded again.
Tarquin said, The Spring Court is my southern neighbor. I have tenuous ties with them, but unless asked, I will not mention that you were here.
Thief, liar, manipulator. I didn't deserve his alliance, but I bowed my head in thanks.
Any other treasure troves to show me? Are gold and jewels not impressive enough? What of your merchant's eye?
I tapped the box. Oh, I got what I wanted. Now I'm curious to see how much your alliance is worth.
Tarquin laughed, the sound bouncing off the stone and wealth around us. I didn't feel like going to my meetings this afternoon anyway.
What a reckless, wild young High Lord.
Tarquin linked elbows with me again, patting my arm as he led me from the chamber. You know,
I think it might be very easy to love you too, Feyre.
Easier to be your friend.
I made myself look away shyly as he sealed the door shut behind us, placing a palm flat on the space above the handle. I listened to the click of locks sliding into place. He took me to other rooms beneath his palace, some full of jewels, others weapons, others clothes from eras long since past. He showed me one full of books, and my heart leaped. But there was nothing in there. Nothing but leather and dust and quiet. No trickle of power that felt like the mail beside me. No hint of the book I needed. Tarquin brought me to one last room, full of crates and stacks covered in sheets. And as I beheld all the artwork looming beyond the open door, I said, I think I've seen enough for today. He asked no questions as he resealed the chamber and escorted me back to the busy, sunny upper levels. There had to be other places where it might be stored, unless it was in another city. I had to find it, soon. There was only so long Rhys and Amren could draw out their political debates before we had to go home. I just prayed I'd find it fast enough, and not hate myself any more than I currently did. Rhysand was lounging on my bed, as if he owned it. I took one look at the hands crossed behind his head, the long legs draped over the edge of the mattress, and ground my teeth. What do you want? I shut the door loud enough to emphasize the bite in my words.
Flirting and giggling with Tarquin did you no good, I take it.
I chucked the box onto the bed beside him. You tell me.
The smile faltered as he sat up, flipping open the lid. This isn't the book.
No, but it's a beautiful gift.
You want me to buy you jewelry, Feyre? Then say the word. Though, given your wardrobe, I thought you were aware that it was all bought for you.
I hadn't realized, but I said, Tarquin is a good male, a good High Lord. You should just ask him for the damned book.
Rhys snapped shut the lid. So he plies you with jewels and pours honey in your ear, and now you feel bad.
He wants your alliance, desperately. He wants to trust you, rely on you.
Well, Cressida is under the impression that her cousin is rather ambitious, so I'd be careful to read between his words.
Oh? Did she tell you that before, during, or after you took her to bed?
Rhys stood in a graceful, slow movement.
Is that why you wouldn't look at me? Because you think I fucked her for information?
Information or your own pleasure? I don't care.
He came around the bed, and I stood my ground, even as he stopped with hardly a hand's breadth between us.
Jealous, Feyre?
If I'm jealous, then you're jealous about Tarquin and his honey pouring.
Rhysand's teeth flashed. Do you think I particularly like having to flirt with a lonely female to get information about her court, her high lord? Do you think I feel good about myself doing that? Do you think I enjoy doing it just so you have the space to ply Tarquin with your smile and pretty eyes so we can get the book and go home?
You seemed to enjoy yourself plenty last night.
His snarl was soft, vicious.
I didn't take her to bed. She wanted to, but I didn't so much as kiss her. I took her out for a drink in the city, let her talk about her life, her pressures, and brought her back to her room, and went no farther than the door. I waited for you at breakfast, but you slept in, or avoided me, apparently, and I tried to catch your eye this afternoon, but you were so good at shutting me out completely.
Is that what got under your skin? That I shut you out? Or that it was so easy for Tarquin to get in?
What got under my skin, Rhys said, his breathing a bit uneven, is that you smiled at him.
The rest of the world faded to mist as the words sank in.
You are jealous.
He shook his head, stalking to the little table against the far wall and knocking back a glass of amber liquid. He braced his hands on the table, the powerful muscles of his back quivering beneath his shirt as the shadow of those wings struggled to take form.
I heard what you told him, he said, that you thought it would be easy to fall in love with him. You meant it, too.
So? It was the only thing I could think of to say.
I was jealous of that I'm not that sort of person for anyone. The summer court has always been neutral. They only showed backbone during those years under the mountain. I spared Tarquin's life because I'd heard how he wanted to even out the playing field between High Fae and Lesser Fairies. I've been trying to do that for years. Unsuccessfully, but I spared him for that alone. And Tarquin, with his neutral court, he will never have to worry about someone walking away because the threat against their life, their children's lives, will always be there. So yes, I was jealous of him, because it will always be easy for him, and he will never know what it is to look up at the night sky and wish.
The Court of Dreams. The people who knew that there was a price, and one worth paying for that dream. The bastard-born warriors, the Illyrian half-breed, the monster trapped in a beautiful body, the dreamer born into a court of nightmares, and the huntress with an artist's soul. And perhaps because it was the most vulnerable thing he'd said to me, perhaps it was the burning in my eyes, but I walked to where he stood over the little bar. I didn't look at him as I took the decanter of amber liquid and poured myself a knuckle's length, then refilled his. But I met his stare as I clinked my glass against his, the crystal ringing clear and bright over the crashing sea far below, and said, "To the people who look at the stars and wish, Rhys." He picked up his glass, his gaze so piercing that I wondered why I had bothered blushing at all for Tarquin. Rhys clinked his glass against mine.
"To the stars who listen, and the dreams that are answered."
Chapter 35. 2 days passed. Every moment of it was a balancing act of truth and lies. Rhys saw to it that I was not invited to the meetings he and Amryn held to distract my kind host, granting me time to scour the city for any hint of the book. But not too eagerly, not too intently. I could not look too intrigued as I wandered the streets and docks, could not ask too many leading questions of the people I encountered about the treasures and legends of Adriata. Even when I awoke at dawn, I made myself wait until a reasonable hour before setting out into the city, made myself take an extended bath to secretly practice that water magic, and while crafting water animals grew tedious after an hour, it came to me easily. Perhaps because of my proximity to Tarquin, perhaps because of whatever affinity for water was already in my blood, my soul, though I certainly was in no position to ask. Once breakfast had finally been served and consumed, I made sure to look a bit bored and aimless when I finally strode through the shining halls of the palace on my way out into the awakening city. Hardly anyone recognized me as I casually examined shops and houses and bridges for any glimmer of a spell that felt like Tarquin, though I doubted they had a reason to. It had been the High Fae, the nobility, that had been kept under the mountain. These people had been left here to be tormented. Scars littered the buildings, the streets, from what had been done in retaliation for their rebellion. Burn marks, gouged bits of stone, entire buildings turned to rubble. The back of the castle, as Tarquin had claimed, was indeed in the middle of being repaired. Three turrets were half shattered, the tan stone charred and crumbling, no sign of the book. Workers toiled there and throughout the city to fix those broken areas, just as the people I saw, high fae and fairies with scales and gills and long spindly webbed fingers, all seemed to be slowly healing. There were scars and missing limbs on more than I could count, but in their eyes, light gleamed. I had saved them, too, freed them from whatever horrors had occurred during those 5 decades. I had done a terrible thing to save them, but I had saved them, and it would never be enough to atone, but I did not quite feel so heavy, despite not finding a glimmer of the book's presence, when I returned to the palace atop the hill on the 3rd night to await Rhysand's report on the day's meetings and learn if he'd managed to discover anything, too. As I strode up the steps of the palace, cursing myself for remaining so out of shape even with Cassian's lessons, I spied Amryn perched on the ledge of a turret balcony, cleaning her nails. Varian leaned against the threshold of another tower balcony within jumping range, and I wondered if he was debating if he could clear the distance fast enough to push her off. A cat playing with a dog, that's what it was. Amryn was practically washing herself, silently daring him to get close enough to sniff. I doubted Varian would like her claws, unless that was why he hounded her day and night. I shook my head, continuing up the steps, watching as the tide swept out. The sunset-stained sky caught on the water and tidal muck. A little night breeze whispered past, and I leaned into it, letting it cool the sweat on me. There had once been a time when I dreaded the end of summer, had prayed it would hold out for as long as possible. Now the thought of endless warmth and sun made me bored, restless. I was about to turn back to the stairs when I beheld the bit of land that had been revealed near the tidal causeway, the small building. No wonder I hadn't seen it, as I'd never been up this high in the day when the tide was out. And during the rest of the day, from the muck and seaweed now gleaming on it, it would have been utterly covered. Even now, it was half submerged, but I couldn't tear my eyes from it, like it was a little piece of home, wet and miserable looking as it was, and I need only hurry along the muddy causeway between the quieter part of the city and the mainland, fast, 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 so I might catch it before it vanished beneath the waves again. But the sight was too visible, and from the distance, I couldn't definitively tell if it was the book contained within. We'd have to be absolutely certain before we went in to warrant the risks in searching. Absolutely certain. I wished I didn't, but I realized I already had a plan for that, too. We dined with Tarquin, Cressida, and Varian in their family dining room, a sure sign that the High Lord did indeed want that alliance, ambition or no. Varian was studying Amryn as if he was trying to solve a riddle she'd posed to him, and she paid him no heed whatsoever as she debated with Cressida about the various translations of some ancient text. I'd been leading up to my question, telling Tarquin of the things I'd seen in his city that day, the fresh fish I'd bought for myself on the docks. "You ate it right there," Tarquin said, lifting his brows. Rhys had propped his head on a fist as I said, "They fried it with the other fishermen's lunches. Didn't charge me extra for it." Tarquin let out an impressed laugh. "I can't say I've ever done that, sailor or no." "You should," I said, meaning every word. It was delicious. I'd worn the necklace he'd given me, and Nuala and I planned my clothes around it. We'd decided on gray, a soft dove shade, to show off the glittering black. I had worn nothing else, no earrings, no bracelets, no rings. Tarquin had seemed pleased by it, even though Varian had choked when he beheld me in an heirloom of his household. Cressida, surprisingly, had told me it suited me, and it didn't fit in here anyway. A backhanded compliment, but praise enough. Well, maybe I'll go tomorrow, if you'll join me. I grinned at Tarquin, aware of everyone I offered him, now that Rhys had mentioned it. Beyond his giving me brief nightly updates on their lack of progress with discovering anything about the book, we hadn't really spoken since that evening I'd filled his glass, though it had been because of our own full days, not awkwardness. I'd like that, I said. Perhaps we could go for a walk in the morning, down the causeway, when the tide is out. There's that little building along the way. It looks fascinating. Cressida stopped speaking, but I went on, sipping from my wine. I figure since I've seen most of the city now, I could see it on my way to visit some of the mainland, too. Tarquin's glance at Cressida was all the confirmation I needed. That stone building indeed guarded what we sought. It's a temple ruin, Tarquin said blandly, the lie smooth as silk. Just mud and seaweed at this point. We've been meaning to repair it for years. Maybe we'll take the bridge then. I've had enough of mud for a while. Remember that I saved you, that I fought the Midengard worm. Forget the threat. Tarquin's eyes held mine for a moment too long. In the span of a blink, I hurled my silent, hidden power toward him, a spear aimed toward his mind, those wary eyes. There was a shield in place, a shield of sea glass and coral and the undulating sea. I became that sea, became the whisper of waves against stone, the glimmer of sunlight on a gull's white wings. I became him, became that mental shield. And then, I was through it, a clear dark tether showing me the way back should I need it. I let instinct, no doubt granted from Rhys, guide me forward, to what I needed to see. Tarquin's thoughts hit me like pebbles. Why does she ask about the temple, of all the things to bring up? Around me, they continued eating. I continued eating. I willed my own face in a different body, a different world, to smile pleasantly. Why did they want to come here so badly? Why ask about my trove? Like lapping waves, I sent my thoughts washing over his. She is harmless. She is kind and sad and broken. You saw her with your people. You saw how she treated them, how she treats you. Amarantha did not break that kindness. I poured my thoughts into him, tinting them with brine and the cries of terns, wrapping them in the essence that was Tarquin, the essence he'd given to me. Take her to the mainland tomorrow. That'll keep her from asking about the temple. She saved Prithian. She is your friend. My thoughts settled in him like a stone dropped into a pool, and as the wariness faded in his eyes, I knew my work was done. I hauled myself back, 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 slipping through that ocean and pearl wall, reeling inward until my body was a cage around me. Tarquin smiled. We'll meet after breakfast, unless Rhysand wants me for more meetings. Neither Cressida nor Varian so much as glanced at him. Had Rhys taken care of their own suspicions? Lightning shot through my blood, even as my blood chilled to realize what I'd done. Rhys waved a lazy hand. By all means, Tarquin, spend the day with my lady. My lady. I ignored the two words, but I shut out my own marveling at what I'd accomplished, the slow-building horror at the invisible violation Tarquin would never know about. I leaned forward, bracing my bare forearms on the cool wood table. Tell me what there is to see on the mainland, I asked Tarquin, and steered him away from the temple on the tidal causeway. Rhys and Amryn waited until the household lights dimmed before coming into my room. I'd been sitting in bed, counting down the minutes, formulating my plan. None of the guest rooms looked out on the causeway, as if they wanted no one to notice it. Rhys arrived first, leaning against the closed door.
What a fast learner you are. It takes most Daemati years to master that sort of infiltration.
My nails bit into my palms. You knew that I did it? Speaking the words aloud felt too much, too real.
A shallow nod. And what expert work you did, using the essence of him to trick his shields, to get past them.
Clever lady. He'll never forgive me, I breathed.
He'll never know.
Rhys angled his head, silky dark hair sliding over his brow.
You get used to it, the sense that you're crossing a boundary, that you're violating them. For what it's worth, I didn't particularly enjoy convincing Varian and Cressida to find other matters more interesting.
I dropped my gaze to the pale marble floor.
If you hadn't taken care of Tarquin, he went on, the odds are we'd be knee-deep in shit right now.
It was my fault anyway. I was the one who asked about the temple. I was only cleaning up my own mess. I shook my head. It doesn't feel right.
It never does. Or it shouldn't. Far too many Daemati lose that sense. But here, tonight, the benefits outweighed the costs.
Is that what you also told yourself when you went into my mind? What was the benefit then?
Rhys pushed off the door, crossing to where I sat on the bed. There are parts of your mind I left undisturbed, things that belong solely to you and always will. And as for the rest...
His jaw clenched.
You scared the shit out of me for a long while, Feyre. Checking in that way? I couldn't very well stroll into the spring court and ask how you were doing, could I?
Light footsteps sounded in the hall. Amryn. Rhys held my gaze, though, as he said,
I'll explain the rest some other time.
The door opened. It seems like a stupid place to hide a book, Amryn said by way of greeting as she entered, plopping onto the bed.
And the last place one would look,
Rhys said, prowling away from me to take a seat on the vanity stool before the window.
They could spell it easily enough against wet and decay. A place only visible for brief moments throughout the day, when the land around it is exposed for all to see. You could not ask for a better place. We have the eyes of thousands watching us.
So, how do we get in? I said.
It's likely warded against winnowing,
Rhys said, bracing his forearms on his thighs.
I won't risk tripping any alarms by trying. So, we go in at night, the old-fashioned way. I can carry you both, then keep watch,
he added when I lifted my brows. Such gallantry, Amryn said, to do the easy part, then leave us helpless females to dig through mud and seaweed.
Someone needs to be circling high enough to see anyone approaching or sounding the alarm, and masking you from sight.
I frowned. The locks respond to his touch. Let's hope they respond to mine, Amryn said. When do we move? Tomorrow night, I said. We note the guards' rotations tonight at low tide, figure out where the watchers are, who we might need to take out before we make our move.
You think like an Illyrian,
Rhys murmured. I believe that's supposed to be a compliment, Amryn confided. Rhys snorted, and shadows gathered around him as he loosened his grip on his power.
Nuala and Caradwyn are already on the move inside the castle. I'll take to the skies. The two of you should go for a midnight walk, considering how hot it is.
Then he was gone with a rustle of invisible wings and a warm, dark breeze. Amryn's lips were blood red in the moonlight. I knew who would have the task of taking out any spying eyes and wind up with a meal. My mouth dried out a bit. Care for a stroll? Chapter 36. The following day was torture, slow, unending, hot-as-hell torture. Feigning interest in the mainland as I walked with Tarquin, met his people, smiled at them, grew harder as the sun meandered across the sky, then finally began inching toward the sea. Liar, thief, deceiver, that's what they'd call me soon. I hoped they'd know, that Tarquin would know, that we'd done it for their sake. Supreme arrogance, perhaps, to think that way, but it was true. Given how quickly Tarquin and Cressida had glanced at each other, guided me away from that temple, I'd bet that they wouldn't have handed over that book. For whatever reasons of their own, they wanted it. Maybe this new world of Tarquin's could only be built on trust, but he wouldn't get a chance to build it if it was all wiped away beneath the King of Highburn's armies. That's what I told myself over and over as we walked through his city, as I endured the greetings of his people. Perhaps not as joyous as those in Valaris, but a tentative, hard-won warmth. People who had endured the worst and tried now to move beyond it, as I should be moving beyond my own darkness. When the sun was at last sliding into the horizon, I confessed to Tarquin that I was tired and hungry, and, being kind and accommodating, he took me back, buying me a baked fish pie on the way home. He'd even eaten a fried fish at the docks that afternoon. Dinner was worse. We'd be gone before breakfast, but they didn't know that. Rhys mentioned returning to the Night Court tomorrow afternoon, so perhaps an early departure wouldn't be so suspicious. He'd leave a note about urgent business, thanking Tarquin for his hospitality, and then we'd vanish home to Valaris, if it went according to plan. We'd learned where the guards were stationed, how their rotations operated, and where their posts were on the mainland, too. And when Tarquin kissed my cheek goodnight, saying he wished that it was not my last evening, and perhaps he would see about visiting the Night Court soon, I almost fell to my knees to beg his forgiveness. Rhysand's hand on my back was a solid warning to keep it together, even as his face held nothing but that cool amusement. I went to my room, and found Illyrian fighting leathers waiting for me, along with that belt of Illyrian knives. So I dressed for battle once again. Rhys flew us in close to low tide, dropping us off before taking to the skies, where he'd circle, monitoring the guards on the island and mainland, while we hunted. The muck reeked, squelching and squeezing us with every step from the narrow causeway road to the little temple ruin. Barnacles, seaweed, and limpets clung to the dark gray stones, and every step into the sole interior chamber had that thing in my chest saying, "Where are you? Where are you? Where are you?" Rhys and Amryn had checked for wards around the site, but found none. Odd, but fortunate. Thanks to the open doorway, we didn't dare risk a light, but with the cracks in the stone overhead, the moonlight provided enough illumination. Knee-deep in muck, the tidal water slinking out over the stones, Amryn and I surveyed the chamber, barely more than 40 feet wide. "I can feel it," I breathed, like a clawed hand running down my spine. Indeed, my skin tingled, hair standing on end beneath my warm leathers. It's sleeping. No wonder they hid it beneath stone and mud and sea, Amryn muttered, the muck squelching as she turned in place. I shivered, the Illyrian knives on me now feeling as useful as toothpicks, and again turned in place. "I don't feel anything in the walls, but it's here." Indeed. We both looked down at the same moment and cringed. "We should have brought a shovel," she said. "No time to get one." The tide was fully out now. Every minute counted, not just for the returning water, but the sunrise that was not too far off. Every step and effort through the firm grip of the mud, I honed in on that feeling, that call. I stopped in the center of the room, dead center. "Here, here, here," it whispered. I leaned down, shuddering at the icy muck, at the bits of shell and debris that scraped my bare hands as I began hauling it away. "Hurry!" Amryn hissed, but stooped to claw at the heavy, dense mud. Crabs and skittering things tickled my fingers. I refused to think about them. So we dug and dug, until we were covered in salty mud that burned our countless little cuts as we panted at a stone floor and a lead door. Amryn swore. "Lead to keep its full force in, to preserve it. They used to line the sarcophagi of the great rulers with it, because they thought they'd one day awaken." "If the King of Highburn goes unchecked with that cauldron, they might very well." Amryn shuddered and pointed. "The door is sealed." I wiped my hand on the only clean part of me, my neck, and used the other to scrape away the last bit of mud from the round door. Every brush against the lead sent pangs of cold through me, but there, a carved whorl in the center of the door. This has been here for a very long time, I murmured.
Amryn nodded. I would not be surprised if, despite the imprint of the High Lord's power, Tarquin and his predecessors had never set foot here, if the blood spell to ward this place instantly transferred to them once they assumed power.
Why covet the book, then?
Wouldn't you want to lock away an object of terrible power, so no one could use it for evil or their own gain? Or perhaps they locked it away for their own bargaining chip if it ever became necessary. I had no idea why they, of all courts, was granted the half of the book in the first place. I shook my head and laid my hand flat on the whorl in the lead. A jolt went through me like lightning, and I grunted, bearing down on the door. My fingers froze to it, as if the power were leeching my essence, drinking as Amryn drank, and I felt it hesitate, question. I am Tarquin. I am summer. I am warmth. I am sea and sky and planted field. I became every smile he'd given me, became the crystalline blue of his eyes, the brown of his skin. I felt my own skin shift, felt my bones stretch and change, until I was him, and it was a set of male hands I now possessed, now pushed against the door, until the essence of me became what I had tasted in that inner mental shield of his, sea and sun and brine. I did not give myself a moment to think of what power I might have just used, did not allow any part of me that wasn't Tarquin to shine through. I am your master, and you will let me pass. The lock pulled harder and harder, and I could barely breathe. Then a click and a groan. I shifted back into my own skin and scrambled into the piled mud right as the door sank and swung away, tucking beneath the stones to reveal a spiral staircase, drifting into a primordial gloom. And on a wet, salty breeze from below came the tendrils of power. Across the open stair, Amryn's face had gone paler than usual, her silver eyes glowing bright. I never saw the cauldron, she said, but it must be terrible indeed, if even a grain of its power feels like this. Indeed, that power was filling the chamber, my head, my lungs, smothering and drowning and seducing. Quickly, I said, and a small ball of phalite shot down the curve of the stairs, illuminating gray, worn steps slick with slime. I drew my hunting knife and descended, one hand braced on the freezing stone wall to keep from slipping. I made it one rotation down, Amryn close behind, before phalite danced on waist-deep, putrid water. I scanned the passage at the foot of the stairs. There's a hall and a chamber beyond that, all clear. Then hurry the hell up, Amryn said. Bracing myself, I stepped into the dark water, biting down on my yelp at the near-freezing temperature, the oiliness of it. Amryn gagged, the water nearly up to her chest. This place no doubt fills up swiftly once the tide comes back in, she observed, as we sloshed through the water, frowning at the many drainage holes in the walls. We went only slow enough for her to detect any sort of ward or trap, but there was none. Nothing at all. Though who would ever come down here to such a place? Fools. Desperate fools, that's who. The long stone hall ended in a second lead door. Behind it, that power coiled, overlaying Tarquin's imprint. It's in there, obviously. I scowled at her, both of us shivering.